The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
KNUS Denver, the voice of the people. News Talk 710. Keeping the talk in talk radio. The Peter Boyle Show on 710 KNUS.
Morning, everybody. On a Friday, it is 8 a.m. That was just wonderful stuff. 710 KNUS, I'm Peter Boyles, Denver's talk station. All the guys, I'm saying goodbye in the hallway. And Randy's back here tomorrow morning, and Chuck is on his way home. 710 KNUS, this is a real privilege. We did not get an opportunity. He was with us for a short amount of time. His name is Professor John Eastman. He's involved in the CU lawsuit. And both of your lawyers just left. Professor, good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Peter, for having me back on.
Yeah, well, it's my pleasure. Chuck and Randy were just both here in studio, and so we were talking about the Republican Party, and I know they're both your lawyers. People should, by the way, thanks for doing the show again. It means a lot. Let's begin at the beginning. You know what? We didn't get a chance to do a bio. We had like 20 minutes together. Talk about yourself growing up and how you managed, you know, to get through everything you've been through, and I'll just turn it over to you if you would, please.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm kind of the corporate America version of an Army brat. My dad worked for Eastman Kodak his whole life, and that meant a lot of moves. We lived in Nebraska and Seattle and Kentucky and New Jersey and New York and Texas. We lived all over the place. I went to college at the University of Dallas, which is a great Catholic liberal arts college, with a core curriculum of the great works of Western civilization. I then went on to get it.
Hey, Professor, we're getting a really garbled message. Your phone's cracking up.
Let me try a different route here. Hang on.
Okay. Try that.
Okay, how's that? Better?
I think so. Yes, it is. Let's continue from there. Thank you.
All right. So I went to University of Dallas, which has a great core curriculum of the great works of Western civilization, philosophy and politics, economics, and history and what have you. Then I went on to get a PhD in American political thought and political philosophy out at the Claremont Graduate School, studied with a chap named Harry Jaffa,
sure.
And who was the premier student of probably the greatest political philosopher of the 20th century, a gentleman named Leo Strauss.
Oh, yeah.
After that, I went to law school at the University of Chicago, one of the top law schools in the country. And from there, I clerked for Michael Luttig on the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, a very prominent circuit court judge, and then for Clarence Thomas at the Supreme Court. And since then, I spent a couple of years at a major law firm in a Supreme Court practice. And then I've been teaching at Chapman University, where I had an endowed professorship and served 3 years as dean. But I've also been running a public interest law firm through the Claremont Institute called the Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence. And I've had 17 clients in the Supreme Court and plus participated in over 200 cases on behalf of amici curiae, giving to the court our significant historical research about the original meaning of various provisions of the Constitution. So that's been my life up until now.
That's brilliant. Our guest is Professor John Eastman. What are we watching happen? I went back and I listened to a lot of things you've said, and I read a lot of things that you've said. I'm impressed. Is it fair to say you're not sure? And I don't want to, take you someplace where you haven't said. You're really not sure about the outcome of this, whether it's this way or that way. Is that a fair statement of your belief?
Well, I think it's a fair statement. I'm not definitively sure. But I think there are a lot of things pointing in the direction that this election had a different outcome than we've certified.
All right, that's a fair statement.
From very significant statistical anomalies to things that just don't happen. Every precinct being a direct a correlation between the two votes, which strongly suggests that there was a multiplier being run, fractional votes that were being reported. That just doesn't happen in a system where each person gets one vote. So those kind of things confirm that there was manipulation of the election. What I don't know yet was whether the manipulation of the election was significant enough to alter the results. But it certainly looks as though it did.
If you were to bring this into a courtroom, which is your battleground, what evidence would you present to the jury other than mathematical equations and probability? But what, and I did look with respect, I'd look for these the secret ballots. And I can't find it. And the one guy who does turn up is kind of an interesting guy in terms of his own credibility. But you're presenting this to a court. What would you show them as the truth? Where's the smoking gun?
Well, so a couple of smoking guns that we already have developed. The statistical analysis pointed to three or four dozen counties around the country that were just so far off the charts, contrary to what was predicted, that you wanted to look at it further. And so far, those two of them have been looked at further, but for other reasons, for lower down ballot races that were close and had to do a recount. One was up in Missoula, Montana, where the University of Montana is. Another was up in New Hampshire, where one of the congressional districts was under intense scrutiny. And in both instances, in the Montana case, after a full recount and forensic audit of the ballots, they found 6.33% of the ballots were fraudulently cast. In the New Hampshire county, they found 13% of the ballots to be fraudulent. When those audits came out, my statistical team that I've been working with, you know, just said, see, this proves our statistical analysis was right on the money. So, you know, and this is the kind of audit that's going on down in Arizona right now.
That's got problems, and we both know that Arizona has. I want to come back. When they found that variances, were they pro-Trump or pro-Biden, or were they both?
Well, no, they were almost entirely pro-Biden,
okay.
either by adding ghost votes for Biden or by flipping votes from Trump to Biden.
Every election, anything I've ever read, and especially some really important ones, read the history of Lyndon Johnson in Texas or the Kennedys in Cook County, the Kennedys in West Virginia. But, with respect, and our guest is really one of the all-time great, Dr. Eastman's here. Would it change it? Which is kind of your premise I've read. Would it have changed the outcome, I guess, is the question, because...
Well, I think so. But look, part of the problem is, let's look at some clear unconstitutional action by election officials, either at the county or the state level or even in the judiciary, changing the rules of the game on the eve of the election, or in Pennsylvania's case, for example, up to several weeks after the election, they were still changing the rules. Yeah. Now, those rules, like for the ability to challenge ballots, the requirements for signature verification on absentee ballots, the ability to observe the ballot counting process, all of those rules are put in by the state legislature pursuant to their authority under the federal Constitution. They have plenary power here to determine the manner of choosing presidential electors. Those rules are put into place to minimize the risk of fraud. And they're also put in place, particularly important, because after the fact, fraudulent absentee ballots, once separated from the outer envelopes, are very hard to catch. And yet these rules were changed. So if 650,000 ballots are counted in Philadelphia without observers, obviously not all 650,000 are fraudulent, but how many are? We'll never know the answer to that. These are some of the dangers of changing these rules or ignoring these very significant rules.
Professor.
But we are learning a lot of other things. For example, the claim by the Michigan Secretary of State that that the machines were not capable of being connected to the internet. Well, the forensic audit up there found, and this is not by the team that did the original audit. This is by the guy that did the audit that was hired by the state attorney general to oppose the challengers. And he's identified what actually happened in Antrim County, Michigan. But he also said, look, we found that there were Wi-Fi chips built into the machines.
Let me reset. Our guest is Professor John Eastman. He's in the eye of the storm. And I guess no election goes off without a hitch. But I guess my first question would be, did the percentage of fraudulent ballots flip the results?
Well, as we saw from the New Hampshire one county audit, and they're now trying to do a statewide audit, 13% of the ballots were fraudulently cast. That's a huge number. You know, one in every eight ballots was fraudulent. That's enough to have affected the results in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
I've read the Philly stuff. But Antrim County, Michigan, because you brought that up last night, which was a Republican stronghold, which the results initially showed Biden beating Trump by 3,000 votes. And then this reversal, and Donald Trump supporters. And again, you went back and you said something. First of all, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here. When people start projecting, it was believed that Hillary was going to win and Donald Trump clipped her. And then, of course, all the Hillary people said Donald Trump stole it or she won it. So we've heard it all before. I kind of heard it all before. And now what?
I think the Antrim County example is a good one where the vote flip. And by the way, the gentleman's name is Halderman.
Yeah.
And I think he did a very thorough and credible job explaining exactly what human errors led to those machines reporting wrong results. And he did it step by step by step. And, you know, there were multiple different numbers reported throughout the various audits. And he explained how each one of those numbers was incorrectly reported, tied to a human error. I think that's a terrific report. And it rebuts some of the claims about Antrim County. But he also acknowledges in his report that these machines, this is what happened. But he also says, but the machines are clearly susceptible to being hacked and having security breaches. And because all of the logs are accessible by an administrative password that was shared by everybody, you can't identify what the extent of what happened. And this is the same fellow that ran a vote contest, but for his Michigan students, who had the better football program, Michigan or Ohio State? Now, if anybody knows anything about college football, you know that should come in pretty close to 100% for Michigan if you're asking Michigan students. And I forget what the number was, but overwhelming margin in favor of Ohio State out of these Michigan students. That just doesn't happen. He had built the algorithm into the machine that flipped the votes. And so when he's hired by the state of Michigan to defend the election, and he says, here's what happened in Antrim, it has a high degree of credibility for me. But he also says, but the machines are susceptible to this kind of manipulation. And that should be a huge red flag.
I've read these guys, and I don't have your expertise, but were the machines with the Wi-Fi chips, were they... I mean, I'm not clear about what happened on Election Day. And again, this is, you know, I'm just this, you know, talk show host, but were the machines with the Wi-Fi chips, were they connected to Wi-Fi on Election Day?
Well, this is the Antrim County litigation lawyer, Matt DiParno, sought subpoena because the logs on the machines in Antrim County had been deleted. So he issued subpoenas to eight other counties in the state that were using the same equipment to see if they could ascertain from those machines. And last week, those subpoenas were quashed, and he's not going to get that information. I think this is rather critical.
Do you believe it?
If, in fact, I mean, the fact, but, you know, first of all, they said they're not even capable of being connected to the Internet. We now know they are. Why would you build a machine like that that's capable of being connected to the Internet, which is just a huge opening for hackers or for bad actors trying to manipulate the election
data? But isn't that part of why Newsmax apologized and there was an exchange of money. We don't know what it was because that was their claim. And, I come back to this. I watch this. We've been clear with each other. I don't believe the election was stolen, whether anomalies perhaps, but a steal is pretty big.
And, well, steal is pretty big. Yeah. But what I want to ask you is,
sure,
what kind of evidence would it take? So, for example, in the some of the sworn expert testimony introduced in the Antrim County litigation includes an expert report by Dr. Doug Frank, mm-hmm, that he has reverse engineered the formula, the algorithm, mm-hmm, that operated in every single county in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And he's done it in Ohio, mm-hmm, and he's done it in Pennsylvania. By looking at the results from three or four counties, he has reverse engineered a six-factor polynomial equation that when he runs it against the census data, he is able to predict within a 0.0001% accuracy of 99.999% accuracy what the results were in every single county. That just doesn't happen in nature.
The fact
there are all sorts of things like that. What he found in the county in Pennsylvania, he was looking at one of the congressional races there, that the vote tallies were enough to have altered the results in that congressional race. You extrapolate those numbers out statewide, and the vote discrepancies were enough to have affected the results in Pennsylvania, which is an 80,000 margin.
Again,
that's large, much bigger than, say, Georgia or Wisconsin.
Because you can perpetrate a murder doesn't mean you perpetrated it. Procedures disconnecting the machines from Wi-Fi on Election Day. Why Wi-Fi chips are there, and I read these guys, and I don't know anything about computers, and I know less about other things, but according to the experts, you can't change the votes with Wi-Fi access. And that's part of what Dominion was saying all along, that you can't do it. And, by the way, it doesn't prove fraud that you can do it. I'm deep in Jeffrey Epstein's life.
The fact that it's susceptible being done doesn't mean that anybody did it.
But how
do you respond to Doug Frank's analysis?
That's
significant. There's no explanation for it. Or how do you explain the fact that fractional votes are being reported?
Once again, why are these other people? It's always my great line in talk radio. You go get your expert, I'll go get mine. And they'll fight it out. And you are, quote, their expert, and I have immense respect for what you've done. But I can go get somebody on the other side that says exactly the opposite. I mean, there's Walter McBain. You know who Walter McBain is? He's at Michigan. He's been on our show many times. He's involved right now. He said you cannot use mathematical equations the way that you're doing it. He said it doesn't prove. And he says that, I'm cautious. You talked about
– I know that one, and he was talking about the specific statistical tool known as the Benford analysis.
Right, exactly.
And he said you can't use it, but you got to be careful. He said you can't use a first digit Benford analysis because precincts are roughly the same size, are designed that way, and that's going to distort the Benford analysis. So we've got people that have done second digit Benford analysis, which corrects for that problem. But I agree. Look, the statistical stuff points to anomalies that ought to be further investigated.
I agree with that.
It is not itself proof.
I agree with that. But it leads into other moments. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
But when your statistical analysis says look at that county in New Hampshire that is 10 standard deviations off of what the norm is, look at that county and see what happens. The statistical analysis said something probably went wrong in that county. But now we know that when a full hand recount and forensic audit was done in that county, 13% of the ballots were fraudulently cast. I don't know what more people need to see that there's proof that this election was stolen and something like that. You want to do that to every county in the country, to get how significant it was. But the fact that happened, 13% fraudulent ballots cast in a county in New Hampshire. does that happen by chance? It doesn't.
But once again, I did a little bit of grad school statistics, but not to your level. I can find all the again, we look at the Newsmax settlement, which I thought was interesting. Newsmax said all the things that you have said plus. And when they talked about Philly, the truck drivers and the people crossing the river and all that kind of stuff was all proven not to be true.
Well, hang on a second.
All right.
I've asked people to send me the proof that it wasn't true. Well, nobody's been able to do that for me, so I'd be very curious to hear what.
Well, I'm just telling you what I read. I'm sitting in the middle of this, you know, the middle of America, guest on, reading. I'm a reader, and the Bedford analysis, by the way. And you're talking about doesn't work with voting populations. They say it's the wrong math. That's what the professor said. I remember him saying it. So,
I know, but this is also the professor that developed that tool mm-hmm. and used it to assess fraud in you know Eastern European elections and sure. Syrian elections. He made his career on using Benford analysis in elections, and now he's saying, it doesn't work in elections. It's a little wonky.
What about the counties that there was a zero fraud rate? Do they matter?
Well, they do, but that just means that it's not going on in every county. Although Doug Frank's analysis suggests that something went on much more systematically across the board.
Again, this is a premier question because it happened last week. Why do you believe Newsmax settled?
Well, you know, why do a lot of big companies settle when they're in the right, if they were in the right? Because the cost of litigation is more expensive than the settlement. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. I've not looked at the Newsmax settlement or the documents or what the allegations were.
But they said these things. I mean, not to the depth. You know, you're a very fine thinker. But they said in blank forms much of what you're saying. And I got a little bit of a friendship with Chris Ruddy. I met him when he first did the Vince Foster suicide stories, and you know he's a very close friend of the president's. He's a tough guy. Why, and again, this is a question for attorneys, but why does he throw the Newsmax settlement? By the way, was with Coomer. It had nothing to do with what you and I are talking about. But Coomer, they said Coomer was all part of this. And like I said, that's for another morning. But why would they throw in the hand?
You're asking me something we hadn't.
No, I understand.
We hadn't planned on asking, and I don't know the settlement or the terms, and I don't know what the issues were. So I really can't talk about it.
They said those.
All I can talk about. Look, you look at the latest filings by Matt DiParno up in Michigan, the Doug Frank analysis, mm-hmm. the Jim Penrose analysis, and what have you. These are solid and have not been refuted. And until somebody can explain to me how it is that the election systems at the state level are reporting to, the election data collection central, that is the feed going out to the media, partial fractional votes, mm-hmm. you know, until somebody can explain to me how that happens without the obvious explanation, which is somebody's running a multiplier on the data. You know, there are other things that I've seen reasonable explanations for that I'd like to get to the bottom of. For example, we talked about last time, the vote spikes we all saw mm-hmm. on election night. Well, if those vote spikes are a function of Atlanta reporting all of its results all at once, and Atlanta's heavily Democrat, you're going to see a vote spike for Biden. But if Atlanta had been reporting partial returns all evening, and then all of a sudden you see a vote spike like that, that's a pretty strong indication of fraud.
Yeah.
And how would we tell the answer, which of those two, the reasonable explanation or the fraud explanation? We'd want to look at the time series data at the county level, which has not been made available yet. But the one thing that I can't even come up with a reasonable explanation for is the reporting of fractional votes out of the central data collection at the state level. That just doesn't happen unless you're running a multiplier on the data, you know, multiplying Biden's total by 1.3 and Trump's total by 0.7 or whatever mm-hmm. it is. That would give you fractional votes.
Do you believe?
Nobody's ever been able to explain how that happened why it happened.
I've read a lot about Georgia. Even when it began, every smart person said it runs through Georgia. Everybody said that, regardless of talking about the outcome, and people that I respect, Republicans, Democrats alike, all said, on that night, if Georgia goes to Donald Trump, the election's over. If it goes to Joe Biden or it goes deep, it's going to be a tough night for the Trumps. Having said those things, I've been reading a lot about Georgia, and then I know it's a jump ahead, and then we got to take a pause and come back. Professor, do you think when that senatorial run happened and both the Republicans were beaten— do you think that was a rigged? Do you think they cooked that as well?
Well, that is currently being challenged in pending litigation. And I'd encourage your listeners. It's available. We can, you know, like I can even send you a link. You can post it on your website or whatever. There are sworn testimony under oath, under penalty of perjury, of vote flips and errors in the machines and other fraudulent ballot casting that's significant enough to have affected the results of those elections as well. They just got a judge assigned after nearly 30 days of waiting, a judge assigned to the case yesterday. And it's paralleling another case down there for which there's ongoing discovery. My suspicion is, and the experts have told me that watched it on election night, that there was manipulation of the data as it was being reported.
Well, that's my suspicion.
But I think the results of this litigation, and you're right. I mean, it's just like you got your expert, I got my expert, whatever. But one of the things both the biggest trouble with the University of Colorado that they wouldn't even allow.
I just want to focus on this. I mean, the United States has been conducting presidentials for, I think, 232 years, and no modern candidate has ever refused to accept the results. And I don't know.
Some should have. Look, the subsequent analysis of the Kennedy-Nixon election.
That's a good one.
As you mentioned earlier, as people kind of applied after the fact, all of the assessment.
Nixon knew.
If what we
understand, Nixon knew, and Bobby Kennedy made threats to him. They had actually fixed West Virginia in the primary before they fixed Cook County. So I'm not opposed to the idea of a fix. I mean, I grew up in Pittsburgh. I mean, it speaks for itself.
So I guess the question is,
did they do it?
If the evidence is certainly more certain than not, I won't say it's beyond refutation. There's too many variables, but let's say the evidence is pretty strong that in fact Trump won rather than Biden won.
That's rough.
Should Trump concede and say, okay,
don't know.
I'm gonna accept this fraudulent result?
But I don't know. I'm getting yelled at here. Benjamin Franklin once said, three can keep a secret if two of them are dead. I haven't seen anybody come out and said I did it.
That's not true.
Well, who did say it?
We've got thousands of pages of affidavits. We've got whistleblowers in the post office saying they were backdating ballots.
I saw Bigfoot.
Right?
I saw Bigfoot. I'll swear to it.
I'm not trying.
No, please.
When you're going to go that direction.
Don't get upset.
Thanks very much.
I don't know what just happened. I mean, when people sign affidavits that they saw something, I can say I saw Bigfoot and then he hangs. All right. I don't think we're out of line on that one. All right. Your thoughts, when you look at the rest of 2021, most market experts, why don't we just break? Let's break. Come back.
News Talk 710 KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. Now, back to Peter Boyles, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Try to call me back. It's floored by that. It's Friday. When people say they signed an affidavit, it's meaningless. I saw Bigfoot, and I really didn't want to blow him up. I don't understand. I don't know if it was a tough question. He just got angry. I wish he'd come back on the show. I know everybody's upset. I didn't do it intentionally to knock him out of the box. When people talk about affidavits, they're meaningless. I don't know. I mean, these are the tools that you don't know. It is what it is, and it was what it was. But when you ask somebody about affidavits, that was what was happening with a truck driver in Pennsylvania. Remember that? And they wouldn't show up in court. I don't want to get into a hoot about it, but the rest of 2020, most market experts think it's unlikely mortgage rates will stay in the twos. And that means if you want to purchase a new home, or refire your mortgage, now's the time to get lower payments, especially when you work with our friends at American Financing. The mortgage consultants are going to create a custom loan, and you can save up to $1,000 a month starting the term over. And I'm still floored by that. I mean, there was I was extremely respectful through the entire interview. I don't understand when, I guess when people say, when the old days, when a guest hangs up on you, it's talk show gold. I don't feel that way. Anyhow, you shouldn't be paying interest on years you don't need. Tighten up, buy a new motorcycle, save on American financing today. 303-695-7000, 303-695-7000. Online, AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate. Now, again, he went through this whole thing at Chapman College. Chapman, we agreed not to talk about that, okay. Newsmax, okay, nothing to do with that. But when people say all these affidavits, and I said, well, I saw Bigfoot, and I'll sign an affidavit. And that doesn't mean anything. So we'll take a beating. Thomas, you're on the show. Good morning.
Hey, Pete.
Oh.
Hey, you know, the question you asked before you went to break was, you know, what just happened? And what just happened is you were being a smartass to this guy.
Actually, not. It was a legitimate question. He said affidavits, and I said people sign affidavits that they saw Bigfoot.
Well, and, you know what? The people that sign affidavits regarding this issue under penalty of perjury, those are, you know, it's just not a fly-by-night type of thing. If I was going to sign an affidavit under penalty of perjury with possible jail time, I'm not going to take it lightly.
They have to go into court. You have to go into court, put your hand in the air, and swear on testimony. Look, an affidavit, we've been over this like thousands of times that people say things. I didn't mean to make him mad. I actually wanted to talk about free speech, and I wanted to talk about the rest of it. And I hit a trigger. I hit a trigger. And I wasn't intending to make the guy mad. I really legitimately wanted him on the show.
Well, the guy has been, you know, researching this thing for over a year.
Well, I understand. And I wanted to talk about Donald Trump, and I wanted to talk about what happened on January the 6th. That I had a list of things I wanted to talk about, and I didn't interrupt him.
That was the killer right there. You killed it.
Listen, if you do it in a court, it's perjury. I can sign an affidavit that I saw Bigfoot. I wasn't trying to jerk him around, and I was heading to the break, and we're getting pressured to break. But man, I mean, I apologize to him if that's what it would be, but that was nuts. I didn't step on him.
Well, I thought that you stepped on all of his research.
Well, so what? I mean, so that's what you do. I mean, he says it, and somebody else said something else, and he agreed. You go get your experts, I'll get my experts, and they'll battle it out. But thus far, this thing is going nowhere, and I don't know. Listen, I appreciate the criticism. Brian, you're on a radio show. We got 24 minutes before 9. Good morning.
Hey, Pete, I'm not going to argue with you, but this guy brought a lot of facts to the table.
I loved it.
And, you know, and hopefully, you know, I mean, a lot more facts than you've brought to the table,
except
because you keep saying, I read this, I read that.
Yeah, I did.
This guy had actual statistics and
things that he read.
And counties that you've never even brought up.
Well, listen to me. Once again, do you really believe that there's enough evidence, and this is what they're headed for, to even, I mean, I don't get it, but it's okay. But I do not, there's people you get on as guests and you want to rough them up. I did not want to rough that guy up. I really wanted that guy to stay, and that triggered
him. I'm glad you challenged him. Yeah. But he was triggering you, too, because he had facts, Pete, and you keep saying truth is truth. Well, maybe you'll stop saying that now, because now what you believe is what you believe.
Well, listen.
But now there's
so far all the signed affidavits in these court cases have been found not to prove fraud. Now, whether you like that or not, that's just the truth. What do you say to that?
True.
So far, every signed affidavit in these court cases have been found not to prove fraud like you believe. Or these people swore. They swore that it proved fraud. Not one of those cases has been accepted. And I don't know what to tell you.
Well, you're right, but if you want to believe because the court hasn't accepted them, that means it's
It
true.
Isn't a question of belief. It's a question of the truth. You can believe the moon's made out of green cheese. I don't care. But you can walk into the courtroom and say, okay, put your hand in the air. Now, the moon's green cheese, and you can't do that.
If the election was stolen
because
we don't have the evidence, hasn't been put out into the daylight.
Okay. But remember this again. Not one of those affidavits in any of these court cases have been proven or found to prove fraud like this man said. And I just ask a legitimate question. about affidavit signing, I can sign an affidavit that I saw a Bigfoot, and it doesn't mean that it's true. And you know that, and I know that, and that blew him up.
And I'm not going to sit here and say that the election was stolen because I don't know.
And he said that,
but
too.
But the same thing is you can't sit here and say it wasn't.
It wasn't,
and that's
but it's okay.
And right, I want right, to make.
Right. Take a day. Bye. All right, man. Mike, you're on the radio show. Let's take a hit again. Good morning, 839.
Yes, sir. You've seemingly respected Eastman over time, and that you felt the guy has some great information to provide, and thus you wanted to get him back. I've only called the show two other times, and every day that goes by, the evidence becomes less and less strong to be able to bring in the strongest of evidence to overturn it. My information was, we had data. I think we could have thrown a large dragnet the very night of the election, but every day that goes by at this point, it becomes more and more of a moot situation in being able to come up with the people that you need to turn around and prove that the election is stolen.
I don't need anyone. I mean,
yeah, I know you don't, but the truth is the American population, at least half of them do, and I would say even more than half.
Belief is powerful.
So when I turned around and said that they should have somebody go in and at a location that they know is hot, and I have fast roped. I am a dope on a rope. I am a parachutist. And when the chief of the United States government is able to call in people and say, I want that building quarantined. I want it shut down.
That's different. Now you're going off in another direction. Stay here.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
You guys have made a talk of,
please,
is the election stolen or not? And this has gone on for a long time. So you guys have a lot of talking matter, but there's only one way to prove it, and that is just like when you go in and get Osama bin Laden. You go up real hard. You go in. You're the commander-in-chief. You can take down that building, zip tie everybody, and start getting the truth that night. If you aren't willing to do it, then all it is talk show matter.
Well, listen to me again. I'm waiting for the evidence to come into a courtroom and say, all right, here's the smoking gun. Now we have to believe, and like I said, I can believe whatever I want to believe.
Yep, so can I.
I know, and you're welcome to it. But so far, all the signed affidavits in these court cases have been found not to prove fraud. And these people swore that it proved fraud. Now, when you put your hand in the air, and this goes back to why did Newsmax settle? You can't say it. And why did they settle? Because of what they said and what they reported about the guy who...
Against a particular person.
Yeah, but they did. And what I'm trying to make clear to here, look, I don't know. It was sad. I didn't want it to end like that. I really did not want it to end. And I wanted him to talk. Yeah.
Yeah, Eastman is somebody it sounds like you respect. And
sure.
I think the guy's got a line on things that is...
I wasn't looking for the end. I got a call coming from California. Greg's in Palm Springs. I will save you a nickel. You're on the radio show. Good morning. Greg, you're on the air. I'll try you again. Greg in Palm Springs on a radio show. Good morning. All right.
More than just headlines. This is Peter Boyle's News Talk 710 KNUS.
Well, it wasn't the morning we all expected. I thought there'd be a big dust up with Chuck and Randy, and we invited Professor John Eastman back after only a 20-minute go-round. He's in the eye of the storm up at CU about his First Amendment rights to teach and all these other issues. He was with Donald Trump, spoke on January the 6th before what happened, and I legitimately wasn't trying to goon him. I mean, they was talking about signed affidavits, and they've all been – I mean, when they get into courts, they get thrown out. And I said, well, I saw Bigfoot, and the guy blew. So, I don't know, take the heat. We'll try Greg in Palm Springs again. It's only fair. Are you in Palm Springs, Greg? Good morning.
Yep, I am.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Go
beautiful,
ahead.
Beautiful. Yeah, let me explain to you why I think Mr. Eastman probably got fed up with it. He probably perceived it as a flippant, smart-ass, unprofessional comparison, because people that are under signed affidavits for serious things can and do go to prison. People who say they saw the Loch Ness Monster or there was no moon landing or your infamous one about Bigfoot or whatever don't go to prison. And
well,
so it was a flippant thing. It was apples and oranges.
Listen,
I'm surprised coming from you.
Well, in fairness, I spent the time listening. I geared up. I read more about his life. And when he said the affidavits, and the one that came to mind was and it happens, I saw Bigfoot, and I can sign that affidavit. But until we go into court, and I regret saying it right now, I truly regret saying it, but I wasn't saying it to honk them, because that's one of the, when people talk about signed affidavits, it always goes back. This is way before any of this stuff. People say,
and
yeah.
Signed affidavits are useful tools in the legal profession, and they are accepted in court.
No, yeah, but the guy has to come with
him.
In other words,
to my knowledge, this has never seen the inside of a courtroom.
No, it hasn't.
Lack of standing and the rest of it.
So Let me try it again. There have been over 60 post-election lawsuits and filed by Donald Trump and his allies to challenge the results. And those cases, they've been dismissed by judges appointed by Donald Trump.
And there is no deep state.
Oh, see, this is the answer that's the same. I mean, you see what you just did. Nothing makes any sense to you because, look, this is like, did you ever see Peter Pan as a kid, as a play, when they asked the little kids to start applauding and then Tinkerbell's light would go back on? That's what this is.
I signed an affidavit that Peter Pan is real.
Yeah, me too. Actually, I thought it was
all right.
Hi, brother.
All right.
All right, man. Ron and Conifer, you're on a radio show. We're coming up on time. Good morning.
Well, I think there are at least two basic errors that you make. One is you're begging the question. I don't think you know what it means to beg the question. Most people don't. It does not mean to invite a question. Begging the question is the logical error of basing an argument on the establishment or existence of a matter which is in dispute. What is in dispute here is the integrity of the courts. Secondly, you do not seem to understand the difference between losing a case on standing, a technicality, or losing a case on
the merits. Tell me what this means if I don't understand it. What does it mean? What happened?
The courts don't want to get involved, so they just dismiss these cases on
Trump appointed people, the Supreme Court, that dominated with the Trump people or with conservatives. They didn't want to hear it. Why didn't they want to hear it? Is it because
the
deep state?
They don't want people demonstrating on the steps of the Supreme Court. They don't want to be harassed by people that are doing stuff to their kids
or
whatever.
So the people, they're afraid. Everybody's afraid.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Who are they afraid of?
I just explained it to you.
Oh, you didn't. What individuals or groups are they afraid of?
Demonstrators? Antifa?
Yes.
BLM?
I mean, a court decision that would be pro-Donald Trump, I've read many of the cases. There's been over 60, and they've all been rejected. Why is that?
Not on the merits, on technicalities.
Well, my point is then it's not a case. Dozens of those cases were dismissed by conservative judges appointed by Donald Trump. Unwilling to, I mean, you're looking for something. I wish I could find it.
Do you think
Texas wanted to sue? Texas wanted to sue Pennsylvania. The state of Texas was trying to sue Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Georgia to exhaust Donald Trump's legal options, and the court said no.
Let me ask you this question.
Sure.
How do you answer this question? How do you explain five different key cities in five different states simultaneously stopping their counts in the middle of the night, and then when they come back, miraculously, there's a huge number of votes for Biden and almost no votes for Trump.
Once again, the one case I'm from was in Georgia, and all the lies were told about the videotapes and the suitcases and all that. It was just nonsense. It wasn't true. And do you believe this? Let me ask you a question. When they ran those two senatorial races, did they steal that for the Democrats when Donald Trump and Lynn Wood?
I didn't pay enough attention to that one.
All right, very good call. Anyway, the answer is I can't find it. If I could find it, I'd tell you it's true. I know it's a belief. Clap your hands. Tinkerbell's light will come back on. Have a good weekend. That's it. Unexpected. I didn't see it coming, but then again, it's talk radio. Randy will be here tomorrow. He'll explain it all to you at 9 o'clock because I'm lost. When you ask somebody a question, I thought it was a very, very kind interview. I'm writing down notes of things to follow up on when I'm doing the interview. Check this, check that. He's making points. Boom. All right. Well, Pete, you're a moron. Pete, you're not doing well. Give up. Pete, you're this. Pete, you're this. You're this. You're that. And the list goes on. I'll be back at you Monday morning at 5 a.m. Thanks, Kelly. Take care.